Prepare yourself for a physical therapy conference that will deliver a PT education hangover of epic proportions. Because we're going to Las Vegas.
Las Vegas!
This October, PT Pintcast presents the Tri-State Physical Therapy Conference, October 11th to the 13th in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
3 days of learning, networking, and, well, probably some good old-fashioned Las Vegas-style fun. With presentations by APTA President Sharon Dunn, State Chapter Presidents Chris Powers of California, John Hike of Arizona, and RJ Williams from Nevada. With your keynote presentation by Tim Flynn, focus talks on telehealth, medical marijuana, and motivational interviewing. Okay, just so we're clear, that's three different talks. We're not mixing medical marijuana with telehealth and motivational interviewing. Well, not yet, anyway. Tickets are on sale now. Get yours at ptpintcast.com. The Tri-State Physical Therapy Conference, October 11th to the 13th. What happens in Vegas? Well, you know how this ends.
And I think just appreciating sleep, you know, and appreciating how important it is for health and wellness. And not only, I think, looking critically at your own sleep and how you might have an opportunity to improve that, but really taking this information and applying it to your clients, you could really have a tremendous impact on their health and their recovery.
Today's episode, as we focus on pain this month here on the show, is with a PT who's also a researcher in a sleep health and wellness lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center, Katie Siangsikan. Katie, you can find her on Twitter at KatieSleepPT. She really looks and focuses on the effect of sleep for overall health and how that affects pain, as we focus on that this month here on PT Pinecast. We'll get into that with Katie. Really insightful stuff for you to use in clinical practice with your patients. Episode is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science. They are a single source for PTs looking to add personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training to your treatment with your patients. Find out more at owensrecoveryscience.com. Johnny always sharing the latest research and participating in creating some of that latest research as well. So get certified there as well as the equipment you need to apply it in clinical practice. OwensRecoveryScience.com is the website. So check those guys out.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world. Heard in over 135 countries with more than 1 million downloads and counting.
This is
the PT Pinecast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
May I introduce?
Please allow me to introduce you to.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Welcome to PT Pinecast. The next episode of the show starts right now. I'm your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay. Our guest today is an associate professor of the Department of Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Science and the director of the Sleep Health and Wellness Lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Welcome in, Katie Siangsikan. Did I get it right, Katie?
That was pretty darn close, Siangsikan. Thanks for having me.
Literally, if you had hit record maybe 5 minutes before we actually connected online, you would have seen me practicing it repeatedly. Because you were nice enough to give me the phonetic spelling, which people like myself appreciate greatly. So Katie, a little bit of a background. I kind of gave, you know, really the 10,000 foot view of what you do. But when someone asks what you do, how do you typically explain it?
So I study sleep. And I am very interested in how sleep is associated with other health-related outcomes. So how sleep is associated with things like pain, fatigue, quality of life, cognitive function, physical function. But then also what are non-pharmacological ways that we can help people sleep better. So we've looked at exercise. And now I'm primarily focusing on a non-pharmacological intervention called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. So I actually have a few studies right now that are centered on using CBTI. One is a study in people with multiple sclerosis, and then we've just started a study using CBTI in older adults and seeing if that improves cognitive function and reduces the rate of beta amyloid. So I'm a big believer that sleep really is critical for the proper function of the body. And one of those being the modulation of pain being a key one.
It's pretty cool to see someone doing research like this, but also, I mean, for me and the rest of the audience, cooler to know that a physical therapist is actually in there and doing this.
Well, thank you. It's kind of been an interesting path to get to this point, you know, as I think most people kind of take a circular path or not a very linear path, but I got on this path really as a new grad when I graduated from physical therapy school. It's been quite a few years now, but I practiced full time in an outpatient clinic. But I saw patients with a variety of different diagnoses, and I guess I was surprised how many of them had sleep issues. And I didn't really feel very equipped on what to say to them, other than kind of talking about positioning and being hopeful that my PT intervention would improve their, you know, typically their pain or what other outcomes we're working on. And that would help improve their sleep as well. But I mean, that was really my extent of, you know, how to address their sleep issues. And it wasn't something that I had learned about in PT school. So I think that's what really got my interest first. And then when I decided, I kind of always knew I'd go back to get my PhD because I just like school. I like science. And at the time at the University of Kansas Medical Center, Laura Boyd was on faculty here, and she was studying factors that influence motor learning after stroke. So things like type and amount, frequency of practice. And at that time, and that was back in 2004, at that time, there was this explosion of research showing that while you sleep, what you learned during that day is getting consolidated. So it was helping people learn motor skills. So then it was kind of a natural pairing between her interest in factors that influence motor learning and my interest in sleep. So that's really what kind of got me into researching sleep. Obviously, it was very focused on motor learning, but that got my foot in the door. And then the more I learned about sleep, I realized, wow, yes, it is in fact important for motor learning, but it's also important for the entire function of the body, you know, from pain modulation to tissue healing, you know, to cognitive functioning. And it really just got me thinking, like, gosh, this is really something that physical therapists should be learning about, because we could potentially have a big impact on helping our clients sleep better.
Yeah, I mean, I remember as a student going through my rotations, that coming up in a couple different settings in terms of, hey, make sure you ask, and maybe like an EHR would have that as a section, like, hey, make sure you ask about sleep. But for me, as a student, I remember thinking, hey, is this chicken or the egg? This person has a bunch of knee pain. Of course they're not sleeping well. Mm-hmm. But could it also be the other way around now when you start looking into it? Could sleep be affecting the pain or a factor in causing continued and chronic pain?
Right. And I think that is an excellent question. And I think as a physical therapist, my assumption would have been that it's the pain that comes first, that then is disrupting sleep. But there was actually this really great review article that came out, I think it was 2012, by Finnan and colleagues, where they looked at the longitudinal studies and they looked at the experimental studies that looked at that association and kind of that directionality between pain and sleep. And what they really found is actually the direction is stronger for sleep to contribute to the onset of pain and the perpetuation of pain. You know, they found studies that show that, you know, if you have disrupted sleep, particularly on a regular basis, you are at a higher risk of developing chronic pain conditions, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road. I mean, yes, it's true that if you are in pain, you know, it makes sense that you're going to have disrupted sleep. But I think really kind of flipping that mindset that we still need to be addressing sleep issues, you know, could that potentially be an avenue to reduce the development of chronic pain conditions? And I think that there's a great possibility that that could be indeed the case.
Okay, well, we'll talk about sleep for overall health. I mean, you work in and are the director of a sleep health and wellness lab. So let's take, you know, any pathologies or issue out of it. Just talk about how sleep affects health generally.
Well, I mean, we know that sleep is really critical for the various systems of the body. So I touched on like immune function. So most of your cells in your body are on this 24-hour circadian rhythm, and your immune system is no different. So you have certain immune cells that are upregulated during the day, certain ones are upregulated at night. So when you're not sleeping well, it affects your immune system. It also impacts your body's ability to recover. We know that animals who are sleep deprived are more likely to develop, you know, sores on their paws or their tails, you know, so it makes sense in humans too, that, you know, if we're not sleeping well, it's going to impact our ability for our tissue to heal and to recover. We know it's really important for your cardiovascular system. You know, if you're getting too little or on the flip side, too much sleep, you're at a much higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease because of that fluctuations in your sympathetic nervous system and your blood pressure, because your body doesn't get that chance to kind of rest and recuperate at night. So it puts that added stress on your cardiovascular system. We also know it's really important for while you sleep to kind of flush out the different materials that build up in your brain during the day. So one great example is beta amyloid. There's a great study that came out in mice that while they're in that deep restorative slow wave sleep, that's a period of time where it flushes out that beta amyloid. And so in humans, the theory would be that if you're not sleeping well, you're not flushing out the beta amyloid, put you at a higher risk of Alzheimer's disease. And so that's really the purpose of this new study that we're doing. We also know that sleep's really important and associated with, you know, anxiety and depression, quality of life. And so, you know, I think that's the message, you know, for healthcare professionals is that sleep doesn't just touch on one aspect of life, but it really transcends on all these different body systems. And that's why it really is important for us to be assessing and addressing sleep issues in our clients.
Okay, so that's the macro. Now flip it and let's go to the micro. When you have an individual, you just listed all of the systems that sleep or disrupted sleep can actually affect and stress in the human body. If you've got a patient who's in front of you who is now saying, okay, I'm in on this, what are some of the things that you can do to help those individuals improve their sleep?
Great question. You know, and obviously it's very dependent on the individual that's in front of you. I am a big believer that we should be asking all of our patients some general questions like, you know, how much typical sleep do you get at night? You know, are they typically getting 5 hours versus 8 hours? Because duration is one piece of the puzzle. But then the other important question also has to do with quality. You know, how would you rate your sleep quality? Is it very good? Is it very bad? Because those two pieces of that puzzle, the duration and the quality, are, I would say, are just as important, if not the quality, I put a little bit more emphasis on. So I think that's a great place to start. I also, though, think that it's really important to screen people for the most common sleep disorders, because what's actually fascinating is that about 80% of sleep disorders are undiagnosed, particularly sleep apnea. And we've run into this with some of our research studies where we screen people for restless leg syndrome or sleep apnea, and then we have them come into a sleep laboratory, and lo and behold, they have what would be considered, you know, obstructive sleep apnea. And so I think we have an important role in, you know, identifying those people. And I don't think PTs need to know every single sleep disorder because there's over 100 of those, and that's outside of our scope of practice. There's physicians that specialize in that. I think being able to screen those most common ones certainly is reasonable to expect. And obviously, if somebody is at risk of sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome, you know, then referring those individuals for further assessment, because doing things like sleep health promotion techniques is not as likely to have as big of an impact on those people. You know, with sleep apnea, they usually need to be on a CPAP or a BiPAP. Restless leg syndrome, you know, there's different treatments for that. But if it's somebody who you're fairly confident does not have a sleep disorder, but perhaps more has insomnia-like condition, you know, where they're having difficulty either falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up too often, which is typically what we would see in clients who have pain or a chronic pain condition. You know, then what I really think we should be drawing on are on the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And I want to also caveat that, I don't think PTs all need to go out and get trained on CBTI. I have, but I also use it for research purposes. But I think we can certainly draw on those main tenets of CBTI, incorporate that into our clinical practice. And so those main tenets would be having a regular sleep schedule is critically important, because having that regular time to bed and particularly the time to wake up really helps to set your circadian rhythm. And that is key. The other big component is the concept of stimulus control. And so that is, you know, if you're in bed, you're sleeping because you want your brain to associate your bed with sleep. You don't want your brain to associate your bed with tossing and turning and being worried about not sleeping or pain for that matter. So those are two real big ones. You know, other ones too are focusing on like relaxation techniques. So there's a handful of relaxation techniques that I tend to use. Again, obviously that's very individualized on what works for those individuals. You know, exercise is good for lots of reasons. It's also helpful to help people sleep better. And then some other kind of general sleep hygiene, like making sure that your environment is comfortable, that it's dark. You want your environment that you're sleeping in to be as dark as possible, because darkness tells your brain it's time to sleep, whereas light tells your brain it's time to wake up. And it's also a very potent determinant of your circadian rhythm as well. So I'll oftentimes tell people, you know, blackout curtains is one option. You can get those cheap little sleep masks. I just put a t-shirt over my eyes. you know, that's my cheap option. And then making sure that the room is comfortable, you know, not too hot, not too cold, things like that. So a lot of it, it's not, you know, it's not these big, huge, major things. A lot of it are these, you know, kind of small, doable, oftentimes kind of changes in behavior that can have a really dramatic impact on people's overall sleep, though.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned, you know, the sleep masks. I went hiking in Alaska in the summer when it was light, you know, most of the day, or, you know, longer than we're used to everywhere else. And being able to have a winter hat to pull over my eyes was the only way I was able to go to sleep in a tent.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say devices. I was waiting for devices to pop up. Where does that come into play?
So there's a couple things with devices, and I'm assuming you mean like screens.
Yeah, iPads, you know, laptops, phones.
Phones, those sorts of things. There is evidence that the blue light that gets emitted from devices can interfere with melatonin production. That seems to be probably more potent in the teenage range, perhaps not as well studied in older adults. But there is evidence that being on devices can, in fact, reduce the amount of melatonin that gets secreted. So the recommendation is to get off devices 1 to 2 hours before bedtime. The thing with devices is that, yes, there's this blue light that gets emitted, but it's also the content that you're viewing. You know, if it's content that, you know, is stimulating or upsetting or, frankly, just really engaging. You know, if you're on social media and you're like, oh, I'm just going to check social media for 10 minutes before I go to bed, and the next thing you know, an hour has gone by. And now you're up later and you're, you know, messing up with your sleep time and your sleep duration and your circadian rhythm. So it's multifaceted, I guess, is my point with the screens on and why I recommend for people to get off devices for 1 to 2 hours before bedtime.
Okay.
And then the other key piece, though, and I didn't mention this, was the I really encourage people to have a relaxing bedtime routine. Just like with stimulus control, you want your brain to associate your bed with sleep. You also want your brain to associate that relaxing bedtime routine with preparation for your body and your mind and your brain to say, okay, it's time to relax, it's time to calm down, it's time to prepare for sleep, and what comes next is going to be my bed and sleep. And so I think for everybody, figuring out what that relaxing routine will be, and it doesn't have to be like a magical length, you know, 5 minutes is sufficient, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever works for you. The key is to find something that works and then stick with it, kind of as a way to wind down your body and prepare.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back to the PT Pinecast.
Want to thank Brooks IHL. That's Brooks Rehabilitation Institute of Higher Learning, offering residencies, fellowship education, orthopedics, women's health, geriatrics, neurologic PT, pediatric sports. That's an overview of their residencies. Check out what they have to offer at brooksihl.org. World-class educational opportunities to the local and regional community. Check them out, brooksihl.org.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play. This is the PT Pinecast.
Yeah, I thought doing an episode like this, especially from your angle in terms of sleep, would be great not only for our audience because they're physical therapists, that, you know, they're people, they can benefit from it, but also being able to suggest some of these things that you're listing for their patients. And we bring you on, as we mentioned at the top of the show, because of a focus on pain in the month of September being Pain Month. So the next question would be, addressing sleep issues in an acute phase of pain, can that help to prevent or maybe reduce the onset of chronic pain?
That is an excellent question. It is on my growing list of studies to do. So if anybody out there wants to work with me on this study, by all means, reach out to me. Because I definitely think that that is a great hypothesis, that if we could help people sleep better earlier on, or I think this is also key, or prevent sleep issues from developing in that acute phase, could we potentially reduce the impact of sleep issues, but also reduce that risk of transitioning from an acute pain condition to a chronic pain condition? And I'm not aware of studies that have done that. I fully believe that that is a solid hypothesis to work with. I think one thing that I struggle with is that knowing that sleep is so important for tissue healing, pain modulation, I would also hypothesize that there might be an increase in sleep need in those people in that a chronic or in the acute phase to help their bodies heal.
Right.
And so, you know, I think the issue is in balancing between, like, you know, letting them get more sleep if they need to, or using medication short-term to help them sleep better. You know, again, in the interest of preventing ongoing sleep issues from developing. Because oftentimes what I see in people in an acute pain condition is that they start to go to bed at different times or wake up at different times, or they start to nap in the afternoon because they didn't sleep well at night, or they start to spend more time in bed in the hopes that they get more sleep. And so again, in the acute phase, like, is that potentially necessary? Maybe, because it's increasing the duration and maybe quality of their sleep. But at what point do we say, okay, that acute phase now should kind of be resolving, you really need to get back on a really good sleep schedule, really focus on the stimulus control. And that's really what we don't know, is how much sleep do you need in that acute phase to help you heal? And at what point then do you try to get back on that kind of better sleep stage? And that, to be honest, we've kind of toyed with this idea in the concussion population. I have a student who's very interested in looking at sleep and concussion. And it comes up with the same thing, is that there's probably an increased need of sleep immediately after a concussion, again, to help the brain heal. But these really bad habits seem to develop oftentimes in that acute phase, that then that's what really perpetuates the sleep issues and potentially delays recovery and concussion. And I would guess it's something similar that happens in people with acute pain transitioning to chronic pain, or at least it can be a contributing factor, I would hypothesize.
Okay. You also teach in the DPT and PhD programs at KUMC. Dare a student ever yawn in front of you in your class? Like, that must be, that just can't happen.
Well, I don't usually call them out. but I will say, I mean, because I now do give lectures about, you know, the importance of sleep and sleep health for our DPT students, really in the lens for them to apply that information to their patients and the clients that they're working with. But I can definitely see the light bulbs going off of like, gosh, well, I'm not getting regular sleep stages. And oh, I'm taking a bunch of naps and I'm relying on caffeine. So my hope is that, you know, they are taking some of that information for their own health and well-being, but also using that then, you know, with their clients as well. And I thankfully think the message is starting to get out. You know, I give lectures now. You know, there's a couple programs in the Kansas City area that I now go and lecture about sleep health. I've done some lectures, you know, via, you know, video conferencing. And so I think more students are hearing that message. But I think that's an important piece, is, you know, students have to take care of themselves,
right?
Be it sleep well, exercise, good nutrition, stress management, in order to adequately care for their patients.
Yeah, maybe sacrificing that last hour of trying to cram each and every night and saying, it's probably going to be better for me, my cognition, my overall health, to take that last hour of studying one night and flip into a sleep preparation and getting an extra little bit of sleep.
Absolutely. I don't know if you have read Matthew Walker's book, Why We Sleep. It's actually a really good read and an interesting read. He does a really good job of taking a lot of research about sleep and kind of distilling it in, you know, to nuggets of information and understandable information. But one of the things that I was really interested in his book was kind of his rationale that, you know, when you're not sleeping well, you are really not as productive as you could be the next day.
Yeah.
You know, so not only are you not learning as much, you're not remembering the information that was presented to you, but then you're actually less productive the next day. And so I think for students, that really resonates with them, is like, well, gosh, yeah, I'd love to study less and remember this information even better, and I'd love to be more productive the next day. And so I think, you know, I think they're open and receptive to that. You know, I like to do experiments. You know, I always refer to things as experiments. And so I usually challenge them with the experiment of, you know, prioritize your sleep for the next week. Try to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep on a consistent basis and see how you feel. You know, and a lot of them will take me up on the challenge or the experiment. And, you know, oftentimes they do feel a lot better after they've done that.
What is the sweet spot? I know it's different for everyone, but, you know, things tend to perpetuate, especially on social media, with how many ounces of water we should be drinking, and, you know, what's the sweet spot of sleep, or is there one?
The recommendation from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine is that adults should get at least 7 hours of sleep each night for optimal health. You know, it used to be, they said, you know, 6 to 8 hours, and now it's just 7 or more. You know, and because of that, there is obviously evidence that shows that if you get, you know, 5-6 hours of sleep on a regular basis, it affects your overall health. It affects your cognitive function. There's all these bad things that happen. But then on the flip side, there is, though, evidence that shows that if you're getting 9-10 more hours of sleep each night, that that is not optimal for health either. But the reason for that, because I oftentimes get like, well, wait a minute, you just said sleep's really good for our health. Wouldn't more sleep be even better? And really what seems to happen is that when people are getting, you know, 9-10 hours or more of sleep each night, it's usually that there's some underlying, you know, health issue that's going on that is requiring additional sleep. Or oftentimes what I see in those individuals that I work with, you know, that come in to see me for CBTI, if they're getting 9-10 hours of sleep, but they're still waking up, not feeling like they're well rested, that is really kind of a sign that there's something going on in their sleep, that they have sleep apnea, they're having periodic limb movements, you know, they have some sleep disorder that hasn't been diagnosed yet. So that is definitely a red flag oftentimes.
That's a great question for a PT to ask. And you mentioned it's not in our scope, but it's a great way to say, hey, something isn't right here. And where can I refer out to, or who can I get you in front of?
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is, you know, at least having the information of, you know, suspecting that there could potentially be something going on with people's sleep, and then referring them, you know, by all means, you know, referring them back to their primary care physician. There is a link on the American Academy of Sleep Medicine where you can actually find accredited sleep laboratories by zip code. So that is actually a really awesome resource. I mean, I'm very lucky to be at KU Medical Center where I have a sleep laboratory, and I work closely with a sleep neurologist, but I know that not all PTs have that. And so being able to share that information on, you know, you put in your zip code and then these accredited sleep laboratories will pop up. And in order to be accredited, they have to have a board certified physician in sleep medicine. So that's probably the easiest way to find where to refer, especially if you're going to refer them to a sleep specialist. But probably the easiest thing and the most direct thing is to refer them to their primary care physician for further determination if they need to be referred to a specialist.
That's love that. Great advice. Katie, you got 4 kids. Do any of them ever have a chance of getting an extra hour added past their bedtime?
Well, I'm probably not the best really about their sleep schedule, particularly because we've just transitioned from summer now to the start of school. And so we're kind of struggling this week. They started school last Monday. So last week was a bit of a struggle to get from the summer schedule back to the school schedule. But I do get to be a pretty big stickler when it comes to school, schedule time and, making sure that we do as best as we can, to stay on a regular schedule. Not always possible, but we do the best we can.
Yeah, of course. Give a little bit of a shout out to your lab. Talk a little bit about what else happens at the Sleep Health and Wellness Lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center. It's great that something like that exists.
Sure. I have a really awesome team, and I think that is key, that this research doesn't happen by me alone. It happens by a whole team. I've had some really phenomenal PhD students that have rotated through my lab and have gone on to have faculty position at various universities. So they've done things like looking at sleep and fatigability in people with MS. We have a study going on right now, I mentioned, where we're literally just starting recruitment to address insomnia in older adults. So I have a great study coordinator and a research assistant that are recruiting people for that study right now. I have a PhD student who I mentioned is interested in sleep and concussion. So we actually worked on a systematic review that she'll be the lead author on to look at the association between sleep and concussion recovery. And seeing that if you have poor sleep right after your concussion, you're at a higher risk of having perpetuated concussion symptoms down the road. And then she's very interested in doing a sleep intervention in people with concussion. So those are kind of all the different things we have going on right now. I really do have an interest, though, in distilling CBTI into modules or nuggets that physical therapists can use and apply in the clinic. And so that really is on my list of projects to do that I'd love to work on. I think that there's a big need. You know, we certainly can, you know, talk about the importance of sleep and steps that they could take, but I think really distilling it into usable information that physical therapists can take and use and apply is really something I would like to work on, you know, once I have a little bit more time to do that.
I like how you use distill on a podcast. Now, we typically record over beers. Well done. I picked up on that. But no, once you do something like that, please give us a call. I'd love to have you back on it and be able to share what those types of things, you know, would be able to do and how they'd be able to set it up.
Great. Yeah, absolutely.
Twitter handle for Katie, if you want to follow her on social media, is at KatieSleepPT. Katie, are you ready for three questions?
I'm ready.
On the hot seat with three questions on the PT Pinecast.
Let's do it. Three questions brought to you by our sponsors at Aureus Medical Staffing. Quite simply, they find physical therapist jobs anywhere in the 50 U.S. states. So PTs, PTAs, I like to say get to do what you want to do, where you want to do it. Short-term assignments for 13 weeks is typically how long those are, or long-term assignments if you like where you want to stay. So it's like a test drive. If you're like, oh, you know, I always wanted to go to the Pacific Northwest, take a test drive, because you get there, you might be like, oh, this isn't what I expected. You can then move on. It's like having a clinical rotation. So AureusMedical.com is where you can find out where your license can take you. So question number one is, where would you go, Katie, if you had 13 weeks carte blanche to go anywhere in the 50 U.S. states? Where's somewhere you wouldn't mind going?
Yeah, I think if I have to pick one state, I'm going to go with Alaska.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been there. Hawaii would probably be a close second. I've been there. It's beautiful. I'd love to go back. But Alaska is definitely on my bucket list. So I would pick there.
And that's just, I mean, for individuals with sleep disturbances, that's got to be shooting fish in a barrel.
Right, exactly. There's a lot of opportunity there.
Well, yes, Alaska and Hawaii get said a lot for this question, but they do have positions regularly in both of those places. I figured Hawaii would come up and be gone, but no, they have them so often. And it is kind of a commitment to go that far away, but if you're looking to do it, Aureus can send you there. And again, the website, AureusMedical.com. Second question is a what question. What's something that you've watched, listened to, read, that really inspired you?
So I right now am reading Sarah Marsh's book, Heartland.
Okay.
And we're doing a book club for our Women in Medicine and Science at KU Medical Center. And it's a fascinating read about growing up in rural, poor Kansas and how that has impacted her access to education and healthcare. And I've about halfway through the book. And it's really been a great read, and I would highly recommend it. And I think it's eye-opening, you know, as somebody who has grown up in urban areas, you know, middle class, Caucasian, you know, recognizing the privileges that I have, and not everybody has those. So good book.
Excellent. And this is just my way of cheating to get good stuff, because I like reading books, but I don't like picking them out. So I like when people can find them for me. Third question is a who question. Who is someone the audience should know more about? Maybe someone who's doing great work that deserves a little more exposure.
I would, as far as the sleep research and distilling sleep information, Matthew Walker is somebody that I recommend people follow. I mean, he's fairly well known, but his book, Why We Sleep, I really find it to be, I found it interesting to myself to read, you know, because not all the time can researchers take information and, you know, make it usable and digestible by the general public. And so I found it beneficial. And then I sometimes have, you know, patients that I work with that, you know, want to learn more about sleep and want some resources. And I'll recommend that book to some patients if they're really interested in it. So he does some really great research. He's a great proponent of promoting sleep health. He's on Twitter. So I would recommend following him if you're more interested in learning about sleep and overall health.
Perfect. All right, you're off the hot seat. That's three questions, again, from our sponsors at Aureus Medical Staffing, AureusMedical.com. You did mention social media. I do want to make sure people can follow you. Again, that's Katie Sleep PT on Twitter. The last thing we do on the show, Katie, is your parting shot.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Rock Tape. More than just a tape company, Rock Tape is a movement company, tools and education for medical professionals. If you're looking to help your patients go stronger longer, check out rocktape.com.
It's your chance for like your mic drop moment. The last thing the audience gets to hear from you on the episode. What would your parting shot be?
Gosh, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
I mean, I think just appreciating sleep, you know, and appreciating how important it is for health and wellness. And not only, I think, looking critically at your own sleep and how you might have an opportunity to improve that, but really taking this information and applying it to your clients. You could really have a tremendous impact on their health and their recovery.
Love it. Katie Sangsukhan, appreciate you taking some time out and talking with us here during Pain Month on how sleep can affect that. And appreciate the insight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Our home on the internet.
ptpinecast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
Hi, I'm Alexa. You can now hear PT Pinecast using me. Just say, "Hey Alexa, launch PT Pinecast." Or you could be nice and try saying please for once.
What is being polite dead these days?
To hear episodes, just say, "Hey Alexa, launch PT Pinecast." Maybe throw in a please at the end.